You are listening to Uncommon Women on Red Podcast.
When fashion designer Anita Dongre started her business with two sewing machines in her bedroom balcony in the early 1990s, little did she imagine that one day she would be dressing people like Kate Middleton, Hillary Clinton, and Ivanka Trump. Today, Anita is at the top of her career. She enjoys huge success. But it wasn't always this way. As a young designer, her clothes were rejected. When she tried to open her own store, people didn't take her seriously. Did Anita give up? No. Instead, she decided to never take no for an answer. Hello and welcome to Uncommon Women. I am your host, Gayatri Rangachari Shah, and I bring you inspiring stories of women breaking barriers to make the world a better place, jo society mein badlaav la rahi hain. 2 years ago, at the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland, I had the pleasure of meeting Anita, India's most successful fashion designer. She was speaking at an event there, and the room was packed. It's not hard to see why. 21 years ago, Anita opened her first store in Mumbai, and today sells out of 1,000. She even has one in New York City. She has created successful fashion brands, labels like And, Global Desi, Anita Dongre Bridal Couture, Grassroot, and jewelry brand Pink City. Her company has a turnover of 1,000 crores or $130 million, more than any other Indian fashion designer. And from her humble beginnings in a tiny space, today she works in her own state-of-the-art, environmentally friendly office building. Anita, it's lovely to have you on the show.
Hi, Gayatri. Thank you so much for having me on your show.
How are you doing during these COVID times?
Well, on a professional level, very challenging. But on a personal level, this, you know, just the stay at home and working from home has been wonderful.
The COVID pandemic has really affected businesses everywhere. And fashion in particular has taken a beating. How are you faring?
You know, the stores have just started opening up. I think it's just been about 10 days and few of the stores have opened up and some of them are open 3 days of the week. So retail really hasn't started for us. Our e-com site also just started shipping 2 weeks ago. It's a little too early to tell. But right now, our whole focus is just on, just making sure that everybody is well looked after. We have so many people who depend on us and just making sure that we're there for the teams, trying to think of ways to bring in more revenue, maybe through digital, because the brick and mortar stores are facing challenging times, doing business through WhatsApp, just trying to see how best we can get everything back on track.
And how
the
many?
The factory hasn't yet started. It's just started with 10% people. You know, waiting for when we will all be able to work together and, you know, working on how will we do this effectively, how will we do this, keeping everybody's safety in mind. So much of pre-prep work is going on before we all open and, you know, come back to work.
How many employees do you have?
Gayatri, we're about 2,500 employees in the company who are directly employed by us.
That's a
number that comes with huge responsibility.
That's right. That's a very large number of employees, Anita.
Yes, like I said, it's a huge responsibility. And especially in the last 2-3 months during COVID, you know, just the concern for everyone has kept us busy, actually.
Right.
I work with a very small core group. I basically look after design. So my core group that I work with is actually quite small. And then you have a lot of front end at the stores. You have front end staff. So when I say this number, it includes front end, back end, all of it.
All right.
So we're just spacing everybody apart. And I'm just feeling so blessed and thanking God that I have this wonderful space where I can observe social distancing for everyone, because it's a very, very large space. And I'm grateful that I invested in this space about 4 years ago and I had the foresight to do it. Because I used to hate working in Bombay in narrow, cramped industrial estates. You know, as a young fashion design student, I went into these little factories in Lower Pirel, Andheri, Oshiwara. And I used to always wonder that why are the most beautiful clothes in the world made in these dingy places? And it was always a dream of mine that I will work from a space it's quite utopian, my space, to be honest. It feels like a holiday resort home. It overlooks these lovely hills. There's a lot of space. We have 6 dogs we've adopted there. So it's a great space to work from. And I'm grateful for that in a time like this. It's a green building and everybody will have the space when we all come back. And of course, it allows me to practice social distancing, which is today so important.
Very early on in the pandemic, you set up a medical fund of 1.5 crore to support smaller vendors, self-employed artisans, and your partners who do not have medical insurance or coverage to prepare for medical emergencies arising from the crisis. How did you decide to put that together?
COVID had just struck us and we were just actually, you know, just reeling with the impact of, oh my God, you know, it's now come to India and oh my God, this is what's going to happen. It was so new for us in our country, unlike Southeast Asian countries who experienced this problem in the past. For us, it's so new. And, you know, my brother and me were sitting there and I just said, oh my God, you know, this is going to impact so many of our people. And, you know, we don't know. So the people who directly work for us, who work for the company, which is a staff of 2,600, they all have, of course, medical insurance. But you have a lot of vendors and you have a lot of other people who actually are supplying to you, but they're not on your payrolls. So this fund was really started more to just be there as a blanket for them in case any of them ever need any help.
You've got women you work with in villages in Maharashtra to create employment, and they've started making masks that you're donating to various organizations.
And they've been amazing. So Gayatri, I firmly believe that, you know, it's women, and especially women in rural India, who will impact our country in a really positive way if they are brought back to the workforce. 3 or 4 years ago, I was chatting with Poonam Mahajan and she said, you know, why don't you...
Poonam Mahajan, the politician?
Yes, yes. She's a good friend and she said, you know, I've adopted this village Charoti and there is no employment for anybody there. And why don't you come in and what is it that you can do with them? Can you come in? And she wanted me to, of course, do maybe embroidery with them, but that was not possible because we work with skilled artisans in Gujarat and craft is something that's inherited from your parents and grandparents. But when we came into this village in Maharashtra, we discovered that they had no skills at all. And we set up a sewing training center and we were very surprised, and I've always said this, and that's why I say women are going to be the game changers in our country, is that we put up a notice and we just said anybody can come in and join for the training, and not a single man enrolled. It was only the women who came forward. 45 women came forward and wanted to change and impact their lives. And we started that one center. Today we have 5 in Maharashtra. And when this COVID, obviously because of the lockdown, we couldn't open our head office in Navi Mumbai. But we got government permission to open the rural units. And in 2 of the units, the women came forward to start making the masks. So it was wonderful that they did that. And they still, I think we've manufactured about 70,000 so far. And they're still...
70,000 masks?
Yes.
That's remarkable.
So we've been using all these to donate. We've been giving them to various government organizations and whoever needs them, to NGOs, whoever's approaching us, we've been giving this. We've not yet started selling any masks at any of the brands. These have been used specifically to just spread, you know, keep them out so that people use them.
I would like to circle back and ask you about your early days. You started your career with 2 sewing machines. What got you interested in designing and what were those early days like?
Gayatri, it was, I was very fortunate, Gayatri, that at a very young age, I knew what I wanted to do. I think when I was about 15 and I was in the 10th grade, I was quite sure that fashion is what I want to take up. So after my 12th, I enrolled at SNDT, which is, of course, the only fashion design school. I'm a born, brought up Bandra girl. That was in Juhu. It was convenient for my parents and they agreed. Brought up in Bandra and Mumbai, but with my heart and soul in Jaipur, because my parents come from Jaipur. So every year, my summer vacations were in Jaipur. And I think that's where the love of design really emerged, because I used to go 2 or 3 months in summer vacations right from the time I was born to Jaipur. And I was spending a lot of time in the bazaars of Jaipur. To, like, my mom also remembers, she said, you know, when you were about 12 or 13, you were not interested in going to the garden. You were sitting with the lakh bangle wala getting your bangles designed. You were sitting with the bandni wala telling him, aise karo, ye color. She says, you were always very stubborn, where you didn't want to buy anything from a store. You'd want to get it made to your specification. And yeah, I went into design school, totally found my passion. And I think it's so important that all of us find our passion to become our professions. As soon as I entered SNDT and after 1 week, I said, this is it. I love this. I had some great teachers, grateful to them, and passed out of school, worked for a couple of years. There were no fashion weeks. There was no term like a fashion designer then. You know, tabhi kya bola jata tha to women, boutique wali. How I detest that term, because there was no thing like, you know, boutique wali, she's a woman, she's running a little boutique. Women were never taken seriously then, not even now sometimes, so much has just changed. And I was just actually dying to, you know, to create, and I got my younger sister also to join this course because actually she just didn't know what to do after the 12th. And I said, Meena, why don't you join fashion design too? So we both started it together. It's been a great journey. From two sewing machines in my balcony, we moved to a 200 square feet garage. From there, we moved to a 500 square feet little office. So I just moved and moved literally every 2 years.
And Anita,
reached where I am today.
Did your parents instill in you the idea that you have to work? Ki aapko kuch kaam karna hi hai?
Gayatri, you know, today's generation will not believe this and will not resonate with it. When I took up my first job after my internship, my father, when he got to know this, it was a big drama in the house. Mm-hmm. He was like telling my mother, how can you send her for a job? Hamari ghar ki ladkiyan kaam nahi karti hain. Mm-hmm. My father sat me down and said, the girls in our family don't work. They learn how to clean and they get married and that's what you will do. How dare you go to work? I had to really, really fight it out with my father. I had to make my then boss call my father and said, no, she's coming to work. And, you know, we're going to make sure. He came to my office to check it out the first time. He was a very, very protective father. I was the first girl in my family who took up a job. And then I was the first girl in the family who ever even started her own business.
To Anita,
so I was always called a rebel child.
So aapki maa ne aapko bahut ye hausla diya, ya where did you get this courage and, you know, how did you decide to do this?
I don't know, you know, Gayatri. My elder sister also always asked me this. She said, how come you are different, you know? I really don't know. I always had a fierce sense of independence. And I think when I was very young, मैं हमेशा सोचा करती थी कि why women were so intelligent, why they always trying to play, you know what women do and used to do, they used to always undermine themselves and try to show that they are not that smart. Or, you know, I used to always feel that women are as smart as men, why do they play this slightly secondary role in the house, why is always the father figure and the man worshipped, and, you know, just because he brings the money home. I think a homemaker is doing an equally important job in the house. But I think somewhere, I come from a very traditional Sindhi family. I saw that the ultimate power in a family always was in the man's hand. And I noticed that. And I noticed that the power came in the man's hand because he was the breadwinner. I was always very sure that I'm never ever going to depend on a man to be economically independent. I was very, very fierce about that right from childhood. I always wanted to earn my own money and, you know, taking up a job. And I was very lucky that I started in a profession which was also my passion. But I did have a fierce drive to be economically independent. I don't know why that was very important to me. So I was very different from everyone else, where I argued with my father saying, I'm not going to get married off to somebody you say. I'm going to earn my own money and I'm going to earn more money than a man, I used to tell him. And my dad used to look at me and, you know, wonder where this comes from.
You then moved into a 500 square foot space and your business really took off. How did that happen?
So in the first 10 years of my career, you know, it was very new and there were no terms like fashion designer. There was no fashion week. So I was basically supplying to a lot of mom and pop stores all over the country. I remember I used to take a suitcase of samples and take the Rajdhani train to Delhi and come and show my samples to, you know, the big stores in Delhi. Come back with my orders and feel thrilled, you know, come back and tell my dad I got an order of 500 pieces from this store. So I was in business, but I was supplying to other stores. It's exactly 20 years ago where I wanted to kind of change the kind of clothes I was making. And I was a little tired of doing over embellished clothes, you know, doing clothes with a lot of embroidery because that's what the stores wanted. And I wanted to launch design voice of my own. You know, I was seeing and friends around me had started working. Everybody was entering the workforce. I think my generation kind of was the first generation, at least among my social circle, where everybody now was like, oh, you know, I think it's cool that we should work. Let's all take up jobs. Some of them were doing part-time jobs. And everybody's dressing had changed. We were wanting to wear what you today term as Western clothing or global clothing. It wasn't available here, and me and my friends were always like, you know, why do we have to always go abroad to shop for our clothes? So I was very keen on starting a line of clothing that was global attire, what you say, and available in sizes and something you could just come and pick up off the rack and buy. At that time, designers were all just making one medium size, overly embellished clothes. And I wanted to do like simple white shirts, simple linen trousers, shift dresses, the kind of clothes I liked wearing. And I wanted to create this brand. And so when I created the first collection of what I really visualized what the contemporary Indian woman at that time wanted, And what I wanted, when I showed the line to all the stores, they completely rejected it. I mean, each store that I'd been supplying to for the last 10 years and doing fantastic business with said, ye nahi bikega, ye madam, idhar kaun white shirt kharidega? Aisa nahi, white shirt pe embroidery nahi hai, kaun kharidega? The store that time didn't understand that the Indian woman had changed and her needs of clothing had changed. And I was so upset with none of the clothes willing to stock the line because they still wanted those, you know, the embroidered lenga chuli, the salwar kameez. But I just decided that I said, I'm going to launch this brand on my own. And it took a lot of convincing the mall to, you know, this unknown girl who wasn't a brand name, wasn't known 20 years ago, to give her the space. So they gave me a tiny little 200 square feet store. All the international brands. And remember, I was right opposite Swarovski, and it took a lot of persuasion for me to get that store. And then there was no looking back because that store from day one just zoomed. And, you know, I think it was the highest per square foot selling store in the mall. And that's when I really loved what I was doing much more, because I said, here I'm creating, here I'm selling to the consumer. I'm creating, manufacturing, and selling to the consumer directly. And that's something I've always loved, because I love to be close to that woman whom I'm selling to. I love to listen to her. I love to see her wear my clothes. I love to see how what I make transforms her, impacts her. Because I've always said fashion is, it's an emotion, right? There's so much emotion behind what you do. I meet women who say, oh, you know, I wore you for my first interview. I wore that black jacket and I still have it. Or I wore this for my engagement. Or I wore this when I went on my first date. So I just think it's so enriching to do what I do.
How did you face some of these challenges?
Gayatri, I just think challenges will come at you every day. Like so many times when so many mall owners used to refuse to give me space because I was not a big global brand. I mean, I faced a lot of rejection in my career. I just don't let it get me down. I just say, you know, when it has to happen, it'll happen. It'll come. And you just don't give up. I think when you just believe in what you're doing, you don't give up. It's as simple as that.
And is that the advice that you...
You can't let people bog you down with your vision and what you want to do. They're not going to get what you want, but you know what you want. And I think you have to just keep hammering at it bit by bit.
As a young person starting to a business to constantly facing rejection, mushkil hai, yet you carried on. Is that something one can learn or is it innate?
I think when it's rejection all the time, of course, it's going to get anyone down. But I think I've always had my up moments also. Like, I suppose when I opened my first store at Lim and that hadn't worked out, that would have really got me down. That first store worked. So I think you can have a series of rejections. But, you know, one fine day when that light, you know, like for me, the store was the game changer, happens, you know you're on the right track. So I think all of us need that. So maybe it's destiny, maybe it's a lot of good luck also. It wasn't rejection all the time, to be honest. I've had destiny and luck really favoring me at times. And then again, I don't know, maybe destiny and luck favor the ones who don't give up. So like, I don't know, you know, I don't know, who am I to say this? But the store was a success, touch wood, God bless. And I've said sometimes a lot of hard work and a lot of determination. I think the universe just gives you back, no? Sometimes.
Absolutely.
You've talked about not being taken seriously as a young woman building a business. Do you think that that's still the case today?
I think so too. You know, I hate to say this, but yes, sometimes women are not taken seriously. My son's generation, I think, is going to be the game changer. And I think it's, again, how you bring up your kids. For Yash, for him, it's the way he's been brought up. You know, men and women are equal. There's absolutely no ways about it.
Right.
So his generation is definitely going to see the change. So it's up to us parents to make sure that we bring up our boys well.
You're the first Indian designer to get private equity investment, which made big news. Is it difficult for a woman to get financing for her business? How difficult was it for you?
It wasn't difficult or easy. Actually, it just came out of the blue. I mean, General Atlantic had just opened their office in India and they were looking to invest in a fashion company. And I think when they came to us, they had done their full research. So it really took us back by surprise as to how much they knew about us. They just came and we liked them. We had the same vision. And it was actually very smooth. We didn't go looking for investment. They were looking for a good company. And we were at the right time, at, you know, wanting to divest. So it just happened very, very seamlessly.
So they sought you out,
Anita. I don't think it's difficult for women today to get investment. I think today the investment banking community is extremely smart, and they know that, you know, women-run organizations can be equally successful. I don't think today it matters. If you're a professional and you deliver, it doesn't matter whether you're a man or a woman at all.
You've got multiple labels. What inspires your designs?
You know, each label came at a time of its own. 20 years ago when it was And, you know, I wanted to create contemporary clothes for the Indian woman in sizes. Global Desi was actually an offshoot. Global Desi was actually the Rajasthani girl in me, because in And, I used to always do a lot of, you know, printed garments from Rajasthan, because I love Rajasthan. Or if someone in the organization has said, you know, why don't you just spin this off in a separate label? And then Global Desi was born, and, you know, it became like a cult label, hugely copied, admired, bought. Anita Dongre bridal wear was something I always wanted to do. I always said that I will one day do bridal, and I felt it was the right time, and I started it about 7 or 8 years ago. I enjoy that brand so much, because again, it's crafted in Rajasthan and it's Rajasthan inspired. And grassroots, well, just happened. I had to do an offshoot of grassroots because I was getting a lot of messages from a lot of rural artisan NGOs saying that they'd like me to intervene. It was really at the behest of Seva, which is one of the largest women organizations in the country, who do phenomenal work in Gujarat. I went, I met them, I fell in love with them, I fell in love with Gujarat, and I said, we have to do something. So I had wanted to create that as a separate sub-label under Anita Dongre, just so that there's a separate team that works on it throughout the year and makes sure that we are doing artisanal craft work and making it, you know, making it into contemporary Indian fashion. And I felt it was very, very important to have that as a separate sub-label, lest we forget that we need to do this constantly. So in the last 4 years, yes, we do a lot of work with Seva. We work with block printers in Jaipur. We work with weavers in different parts of India. And again, that's a label very close to my heart, because in that label, we actually create work when the artisan needs work. It doesn't follow any fashion cycles. It's more like, you know, small drops we keep doing. Every time an artisan community needs work, we go back to the design room and we create a few designs. And it sells at all the Anita Dongre stores. And it's a label I love working with. It's slow fashion. It takes ages. I was just seeing a production report today. There are some designs we sent 6 months ago, some, you know, kurta 6 months ago to Gujarat. They still haven't come. So it's challenging, but it's slow fashion and it's beautiful. And I'm happy. I am so, so happy I do grassroots, because I just feel happy that I do that. Yes.
Anita, are there any more iconic designs apart from the lehenga with pockets that was such a game changer that you could share with us?
Gayatri, I've always tried. I know when I did the lehenga with pockets, and I did the pockets so... I mean, I just felt the pockets and I put them, and I didn't know that it would become such an iconic statement where brides would actually send notes to me and say, oh my God, thank you for those pockets. And I've got such lovely stories of how brides have used their pockets. And I've always loved pockets. I've always done dresses with pockets, kurtas with pockets, and it naturally extended to the lehenga. I've always tried to just create clothes that are, I think, comfort for me comes first. I think you need to wear the design doesn't need to wear you. So I've always done very simple, comfortable, happy clothes is what I'd say. Clothes that, you know, make a woman feel confident and happy.
One thing you've spoken about is fashion as a force of good. A lot of people who don't take the fashion industry seriously consider it, you know, very glamorous and full of frivolity. But of course, that's far from the truth.
Gayatri, it's a force of good only because it provides employment to thousands and thousands of people. Not only that, not only does it provide employment, it's also the industry that today is sustaining the craft legacy of our country. I mean, today we work with skilled Banarasi weavers. We work with skilled artisans all over the country. It's a privilege to be able to work with them, and it's an honor to be able to continue providing them work. And today, this is exactly what our country needs. Rural India needs employment. I would rather give work to a weaver who's working from his home in a remote village in India than anything else today, or give a woman who's a member of Seva and who sits in a village in the house, and, you know, after finishing her housework, spends a few hours working. She's working part-time. She's working from the comfort of her own home, and whatever money she makes is gives her such a sense of pride, is such a game changer for her, a game changer for the way the men in her family look at her. It's the same story everywhere. An economically independent woman is treated just with more respect, whether it's South Bombay, Valkeshwar, or whether it is a remote village in Gujarat. Because when I go to Gujarat and I was sitting with Gauri Ben, and she was laughing and telling me and saying, Panchayat mein to hamari koi kabhi izzat hi nahi thi. The menfolk also used to treat us so like this. She says, now because we're all earning money, kitni izzat deti hai, gaon humko izzat deti hai. So it's a game changer. It's a game changer all over the world. I mean, today I have a store in New York, and it's so surprising, guys. I hear the same stories sitting in a Soho restaurant in New York from women, and I hear the same stories sitting in a village in Gujarat. Women are the same everywhere. They've really been so shortchanged by our society that today all women are just looking to be treated as equals and to be living a life of respect and dignity, whichever part of the world you are in. And it's really, it gives me goosebumps to see the same conversations in two different parts of the world. And I think fashion can do that, because fashion is one industry that employs a lot, of course, a lot of women.
How did you decide to open a store in New York? And how is that store doing?
The last 3 months, of course, even New York is in a lockdown. And it creates a certain amount of stress because you're still paying your bills. Why did I open a store in New York? Gayatri, I always had the desire to take my designs to London, Paris, or New York. I started with New York. That's a city I think is so similar to Bombay in the sense the vibe of New York is something, the vibe of Soho is something I always loved. And I was just very, very passionate about taking Indian designs and having them in a fashion capital like New York. And it was a lot of hard work, but it finally paid off. And well, it continues being hard work too, because to manage a store that far away, but it's very, very gratifying. And I didn't realize, you know, for me it was just a passion to take my designs to New York, but I didn't realize what a path-breaking moment it was when I opened my first store in Soho. It's a fairly large store. Lost so many Indian brides and Indian girls just kept visiting the store in the first few months, and they felt so proud. And I could see the pride in their eyes that an Indian woman designer from India had come in like a beautiful space and so had created this lovely store. And there were some very emotional moments. I still remember this young girl who walked in the first week, because I was at the store for the first couple of weeks. And her father said that, you know, she stood outside your store and she wept. And she didn't know me. She was just a fan of the brand and like very, very, you know, India lover. Born, brought up in the U.S., but obviously, you know, they missed their country, all the Indian Americans there. And she just walked in and she said, I just felt so proud to see an Indian name on Soho West Broadway. And the tears wouldn't stop rolling. So when I saw this kind of reaction, I kind of felt like, oh my God, I've done something different, you know. But when I did it, I just felt, no, this is it. I want to open a store in New York. And I just went ahead and did what I desired to do. Actually, without doing too much of market research and without, I just did a pop-up store for 6 months. And I felt, that's it. The pop-up store is doing well. Now let me go and invest in a store of my own. So the only, I suppose, market research, I did a pop-up for 6 months and kind of tested the market.
What did it feel like when you had that actual store open with your name emblazoned on it?
The only that one feeling I had when that girl cried and said to me, you know, honestly, otherwise everything just goes in a daze. You know, you go there, you put in hard work, you open a store, you're exhausted. You're happy people come and appreciate your designs. I mean, obviously, as a designer, you want to be appreciated. You want to be bought. And when that happens, it makes you happy. But that goosebump kind of feeling I got when this young girl made that statement. And then a lot of lovely young women came and, you know, said some wonderful things. And all of them are young professionals, all of them looking at careers. And yes, a lot of them feel inspired by you. And yeah, and then, yeah, that's it.
You wear it so lightly, Anita. This kind of, you know, the feeling that these women have when they see you, you kind of take that sort of all in your stride.
Yeah, I just suppose, Gayatri, because I'm very self-made and I've come up the hard way. And to me, even today, every day is a certain amount of discipline and hard work to what one brings to the job. And I don't think that ever stops. I don't think you can just sit back and say, oh, now I have so many stores. Oh, it's a large company. I don't think you can ever say that. I think you have to go in every day and give your job. It's 200% every single day. That should never stop. For when you're a professional and you want to give everything your best, it should never stop. And it's frustrating sometimes because I look for perfection all the time. And this morning itself, I had a little bit of a, you know, internal tantrum because I wanted something done the way I wanted it. And I'd visualized it. And I thought by today we could fix it. And I didn't achieve my deadline of fixing it. And I can see that deadline is still 2 months away. And then you have your days of frustration where I think you just need to be determined and say, okay, fine, it didn't happen. So there was a deadline. Let me go back and I'll give it another 2 months, but I'll make it happen. I just think you, however, wherever you reach, I don't think the hard work and the discipline should ever stop.
You don't use leather or cashmere. You work with recycled fabrics, and sustainability is a key part of your vision. You've been talking about sustainability way before it became a popular issue in fashion. Why is it such an important part of your ethos?
Gayatri, I've been a vegetarian all my life, and then a couple of years ago I turned vegan when I saw some videos on how the dairy industry is treating cows, and specifically because of that, then I finally turned vegan when I saw that video. But I've always abhorred using animal skin, so right from the beginning of my career, which is 30 years, I've never touched leather. That means no fur, no animal skin, no wool. Even when I was opening in New York and for a winter line, I wanted to do wool. But then again, I wasn't convinced that the wool I would source would be without any cruelty. I do use silk, so I'm not 100% vegan in the brand. And I'm looking for alternates to silk. And I'm just hoping in the next couple of years, we can replace all the silk in the company. I'm an animal lover, and that's it. I'm an animal and nature lover.
Yes, and you've all been very conscious about the environment.
I just think that all, you know, the world has just, I mean, COVID has taught us that mankind has just grown, capitalism and industry has grown so much in the last 30 years that somewhere we've neglected nature, Gayatri. You know, we're cutting down our forests to build more factories, to build more homes, and the entire world is paying a huge price for that. And if I could, and if I had a dream today, I would just protect every animal and every tree and every plant on the world and, you know, just sustain them and increase their numbers. But it's unfortunately that human beings are growing and then we are encroaching on the land of animals and nature. And I don't know, somewhere this balance has to come back where we both coexist together because, you know, human beings and other animal species and nature, we all have to coexist together because we're interdependent on each other. And right now the scales are really heavily tilted. And so much is happening all over the world where even in India, where again, not everybody is that conscious about preserving our ecosystem. And I need to do something. I think we all need to do something to preserve our forests, to preserve our land the way it should be, because it's not important. It's crucial now.
What kind of advice would you give someone about becoming more conscious as a fashion consumer? How should one think about how one buys one's clothes?
I think one should buy quality clothes. One should wear your clothes till they absolutely fall apart. One should recycle clothes, you know, give them away if you want them very often, give them away to someone who really needs them, and just buy less and buy quality. I know I'm in the business of fashion, but I would still tell people to buy less and buy quality and buy from brands that are more conscious, sustainable. Just use less in your life. I mean, you know, today in this lockdown, you've just become so sensitized to how much of waste you're creating, and I'm making so many other changes in my lifestyle, the amount of plastic we use, the amount of packaged food we eat, the amount of waste we create. I think if every person just becomes mindful of the waste you are creating and of what you're using, you just tread a little, you know, carefully on this planet. It's just like you shouldn't be greedy about everything. You should just use less. So use less at home, don't waste. Just be mindful of how you live your life.
Anita, you run a foundation and are very focused on helping women. I know you're working with a few villages in Maharashtra. Do you have plans to roll the foundation out across the country?
We have 5 such centers, and hopefully we will do more in the future. Definitely, I think when things come back, we would definitely like to start more centers. We've got so many applications from so many other village panchayats saying they want a similar program. We want to probably now take, you know, run them and make them independent. We want to involve other industry manufacturers also to participate in this program is what we are planning. So that work will, of course, go on. Coming back on the sustainability, I forgot a very important point that all of us can practice. I believe that composting is the simplest thing all of us can practice at home. I would urge everyone who's listening to this podcast to get a home compost kit and at least just compost your kitchen waste to start with.
Regarding the celebrities who wear your clothes when they visit India, like Kate Middleton or Ivanka Trump, do you, like the rest of us, find out that they're wearing your clothes from the news, or are you contacted beforehand by their people, you know, to source your designs?
You know, sometimes most of them buy it online. Sometimes you get an email from their office and you know, but it's always nice when they reach out, and it's wonderful. I think the game changer for me was when Kate Middleton wore that dress. She's lovely. She's somebody I admire so much. I subsequently met her in London at the Palace for a dinner, and she's amazing. Such a lovely, lovely human being, and so well-dressed and elegant. And I feel proud and honored that she wore my creation. She's worn a pair of Pink City earrings too. So, yeah.
In fact, after she wore that dress, your website crashed.
Yes, it did. And we still get orders on that dress, though we no longer sell it. Yesterday, we had this really sweet email out of the blue again after so many months saying, please, 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 can you make the dress for me? Because she's such a role model, and I think she's idolized by so many.
Did you ever imagine this level of success when you started out? All these celebrities wearing your clothes, and that one day you'd have 1,000 stores in your network?
No, I never thought that the royals would ever wear me, honestly. Though I used to keep telling my dad, Dad, you don't know I'm going to be the biggest fashion house in India. And he used to never take me seriously, and he used to laugh. And yeah, but I never thought that the royals would wear me. So yeah, I'm grateful, honored.
What are your future plans for the company?
You know, I have a CEO in the company now, and I keep telling Kavi, for me, sustainability is on the top of my list for the future, and I really want us to grow as a company very, very mindfully, very, very carefully. And I want us to make sure that as a company, you know, we achieve our sustainable steps, step by step, towards our goals. So for me right now, I just want to grow mindfully, Gayatri.
And a final question, Anita, what advice would you give a young person looking to be an entrepreneur, whether it's in fashion or any other industry?
It's the greatest time, especially if you're a woman, to start something in this country, because I think India is a great place today to start anything. So many young people have some great ideas, and we need young people with great ideas to come in and create their own companies. Just make sure that what you do, you're passionate about. Just make sure you do all your homework, and just make sure you're disciplined, and don't give up. You know, don't give up if there are a few hiccups on the way. It's a great time. It's a great time to be an entrepreneur in India.
That was Anita Dongre, for whom fashion is an emotion and sustainability a way of life. Her entrepreneurial journey wasn't easy, but she never gave up because she loves her work. Tune in next week for another episode of Uncommon Women.
You were listening to Uncommon Women on Red Podcast.